want to build a team of some bad people who I think can do some good.
We're some kind of suicide squad.
I told you!
You're going somewhere very bad to do something that'll get you killed.
Easy peasy.
Will Smith.
Y'all jokers must be crazy.
Margot Robbie.
Hi, boys.
Jared Leto.
What the hell's wrong with you people?
We're bad guys. It's what we do.
Suicide Squad.
They're so intense.
In cinemas Friday. Book tickets now.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. And today, I have Seth Cox on the line, and we're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk a lot about the things that have been going on with the Arizona Cardinals. Seth, how are you doing today?
Good, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, although the Cardinals fans are a bit worried, hesitant, fearful. I guess it'd be not quite sure what the right word is. Let's kind of run down the last few days. It's been a series of good news, then bad news, then good news, then bad news. And then there was a roster move today. It's date back to, let's see, the other day was Friday. Rumor came out that the Cardinals and Carson Palmer were close to agreeing to a deal that would extend his contract by 3 seasons. That, in fact, did happen on Friday. The Cardinals and Carson Palmer agreed to a 3-year contract extension that would pay him nearly $50 million. But was only guaranteed with only guaranteed money through 2015. So that's something we're going to talk about during the show. Then the Cardinals on Sunday played the St. Louis Rams, and Carson Palmer went down, would drop back to pass in the fourth quarter, trailing 14-10. Carson Palmer drops back to pass and without any contact falls over and has to be carted off, and it didn't look good. It was a knee injury. Then there was good news after that, because then after Palmer left, Drew Stanton came in, and on this drive, he threw 48-yard touchdown bomb to John Brown to the Cardinals to take the lead. They scored 2 more times in the fourth quarter of that game to go from what was a game in which it was a little bit scary, where they were down 14-10 in the fourth quarter, to looking like a blowout with a 31-14 victory over the Los Angeles Rams. That hasn't been that in decades. The St. Louis Rams, that is, and improved to 8-1 on the season. But then there was bad news again, as the fear was that Palmer had torn his ACL in his right knee. And then guess what? That's what was confirmed. Palmer has sent to injured reserve. The 8-1 Cardinals now have a new starting quarterback in Drew Stanton. And then they made a roster move today, bringing Ryan Lindley back to the desert, signing him from the San Diego Chargers practice squad, and bringing him back to the desert to be the third quarterback for the rest of the season. And well, so that's what we're going to talk about, Seth, we're going to talk about that. So those of you who are listening, thank you for listening as always. Again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. That's Seth Cox. And this show is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading source of audio content, whether it be audiobook, podcast, you name it. And as always, if you go to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds, you can get yourself a free trial and a free audiobook download. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. And you can find yourself the service, test it out. I personally recommend it. It is a great service if you like reading, you like listening, you like audiobooks, which I've become a fan of over the last several months. I highly recommend it. So, Seth, what was the... let's talk a little bit about, I guess the biggest thing was to talk about the contract. When you got word of the contract, what were your thoughts? And what went through your mind through this whole weekend between going from contract to game that was actually a little bit dicey for a bit to the injury to the win? What was kind of the range of emotions that you had as a fan?
You look at the contract extension on Thursday, Friday, whenever it happened. And I think I texted you this, and I'm fine with the contract extension in theory and all of that stuff, because it's kind of just one of those things you have to do. You look at the just level of garbage, I guess you could say, that will be free agents next year. And it ends up being, you know, you have to do something. And what you end up doing is you sign Carson Palmer to, you know, basically a one-year, $20.5 million deal. And then from there, you know, it's basically kind of like his contract was now. Just basically 3 one-year deals where whenever the Cardinals decided he was done, he was going to be gone. And I text you, and I text a couple other people when they signed. I said, the deal doesn't bother me. I understand it and all that stuff. It's just, I'm one of those people that's weird about deals before a player's done anything, I guess I'll say. And I look at done anything as playoff, you know, performance victories, things of that nature. 8-1 is 7-1 technically when he's on the contract was a great accomplishment. But you look at the Chiefs last year, and again, I'm not saying they're the Chiefs, but you look at the Chiefs last year, I think they were 9-1 at one point or something of that nature, and then, you know, they get bounced in the first round of the playoffs, and it just makes, you know, it makes me hesitant. But you look at what the Chiefs did, you look at what the Bengals did, even the 49ers to an extent, and you're paying quarterbacks a lot of money. $20.5 million is a lot of money. I know it's kind of going to be a little less than that, I think. But, you know, what he's getting is a lot of money for a guy his age, and that's got a pretty big injury history. And then Sunday was just, it's kind of that bad confirmational bias type thing where it's like, well, this is another reason. And you don't even, you know, joke about it or say it or, you know, honestly try to think about it like, oh, what happens if this guy has an injury and you just gave him $20.5 million guaranteed dollars? You don't think about that. But it is one of those things, and it's one of my hang-ups. It's not, I understand why it happens, because you want to be able to spread monies over multiple years. You know, 4 years is definitely better than 3 years, especially when you're talking about current year and you can tack on money to the current year. But it's just a small pet peeve of mine where you extend people in the middle of the season before they can really, you know, where things can go awry at any time. But it's one of the necessary evils that I understand, and you know, and obviously hindsight's 2020, and now you sit and wonder. I don't believe the report that came out today by Jason Cole. Maybe I'm getting the name wrong, that Palmer's thinking of retirement. I don't buy that. But I do think that it makes everybody kind of go, wow, is this really as close to the season as we've been thinking?
And that I never actually ran across that report, and I think it's absurd. I mean, we've heard from Carson Palmer as of Monday saying, I'm going to play football again, and I hope that it's here. The guy isn't any sort of indication that I've seen from Carson Palmer this year that he's anywhere near done playing football. This is a guy who loves playing football. It's It's been really interesting to see over the 2 years that he's been here, kind of the preconceived notions that people had that at least because of the national perception of his reputation. It's completely been changed. You see a guy who doesn't get too excited, but you see he talks about getting excited about practicing and doing training camp. And part of that's because of the quarterback position, he doesn't get hit, but that he loves to practice. He loves every part of the game. He gets really excited about things. You see him get animated, and he's a guy. Unless he had a change of heart over the last 48 hours, the last 24 hours, I'm going to call the considered retirement is as hogwash. It's just ridiculous. I, for one, loved the deal. Mainly because of the message that it sends not only to the fans, but to the players. One, we're going to take care of guys that we want to keep around. Carson Palmer's the unquestioned leader on that team. And I look back to the 2008 season and the magical run that the Cardinals had to the Super Bowl. Kurt Warner hit free agency, which was something ridiculous. He hit free agency. And before the Cardinals re-signed him, it took him actually taking a plane ride, and it took the 49ers wooing him to kind of... And I get Rod Graves is very big about letting the market set, letting you find what your value is. But with the quarterback position, especially as important a player as Kurt Warner was, it seemed very interesting to go about it that way. In terms of the money, Carson Palmer was going to get that money probably more somewhere else had the Cardinals not done that. Now, for all reports, is that Palmer was very reasonable throughout the entire process. You'll notice it's not like he took a discount, but he didn't push the envelope for more guaranteed money or over a longer period of time, that he was more than willing to go with, okay, you're going to pay me up front a good amount that he's worth. Then after that, it's, you know, year to year. It's very fair. And especially since the Cardinals have this championship window, we'll discuss that in a bit, but the notion that the Cardinals have a championship window, you can't just leave your quarterback situation hanging. Do you think that the money was too much? Do they give him too much money except this year one? And I, for one, I like that they went. I like that they did it in year because of what the flexibility it allows and the fact that it provides that stability. And you probably got him for less money than what it would have cost in the offseason, especially if they... You're going based on the fact that you're still projecting what he still could do, but he hasn't yet done it, so that price tag hasn't gone up.
Right, and one of the things you look at with him and what the whole contract situation is, like you said, it allows them to spread the money out, so it ends up being, I think, what is it reported, like 6.5 this year or something like that.
I actually have the contract numbers from Albert Breer. There's a second set of numbers that I'm getting from a previous agent, not Palmer's, but a guy who used to be an agent. And this is so I broke it down two ways. I actually wrote it up this morning on Tuesday morning about the salary cap numbers. It turns out it is for 3 years, $49.5 million, although technically there is reportedly a fourth year on the deal that doesn't really exist. It's a fourth year that voids automatically, like this contract was going to go for. So it actually was, if you base it on the original contract numbers and the language, it's a 4-year, $66 million extension. He's been paid $10 million of that. 3.5 was called a roster bonus. 6.5 was the signing bonus. Then next year in 2015, he has a $9.5 million roster bonus and a base salary of $1 million. All of that is guaranteed for injury. And as we're going to be talking about the injury part, is he's going to get that money because Carson will not be healthy, will not be cleared for playing before that roster bonus comes due. And then after that, it's year to year. 2016, he would be due $12.7 million. 2017, he'd be due $16.3 million. And each of those years is split up evenly between a roster bonus and the salary. Interesting thing is, as I ran some cap numbers, is looking at the salary cap, it's not like he has a light cap number next year. I looked at it two ways. Based on the two scenarios, because Breer did not report that fourth year, but this other guy that I'd never heard of but seemed to know he was talking about reported that there was a 2018 year that voids. If there's no 2018 year, a little over $5 million were added to this year's cap. Next year's cap number would be a little over $14 million, including the $2 million carryover from his previous deal, which would have been from the signing bonus that carried over into next year. Cutting him, though, would create over $15 million of cap space, of dead money, so it would cost more against the cap to keep him than to cut him. If there is that fourth year, then it means $2 million were added to this year's cap. And according to this guy, not only the signing bonus is prorated, but I don't know if this is true. I wrote it up as saying this is if it's an in-season extension, then the roster bonus that is also given is also prorated throughout. And so there's a $2 million per year cap hit of the prorated salary. So $2 million was added this year. Next year, with the 10, his cap hit would be $14.5 million. Because you got the 10.5 for his salary and roster bonus, $2 million for the previous carryover, $2 million for the prorated roster and signing bonus. So he'll be here in 2015 no matter what. In 2016, his cap hit would be $14.7 million. The problem with that is that one of two ways: if there was the 2018 year added on, that will void. If he's cut after the 2015 season, they're going to carry $6 million in dead money. If there isn't the 2018 year on it, I calculated that if he's let go after the 2015 season, it would be $3.25 million of dead money, and that's based on a couple of scenarios. So we're looking there. I mean, if there's that fourth year, and if the roster bonus in addition to the signing bonus are prorated. Over the course of the contract, they're gonna take even if they let him go after 2015. There's gonna be some dead money there. It's gonna be $6 million, then $4 million, then $2 million. Otherwise, it'll go from $3 to $1.6 million to none after that. Those are the numbers, and I just wanted to get those out there for the show. It's already on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. I wrote about it. I had both scenarios, whether the 2018 year doesn't exist on the contract and whether it does. So you'll see the breakdown both ways.
Yeah, and I think what happens is you have you look at it and you're not going to cut him, obviously, next year, even after the injury. I've seen some people say that, and that's just kind of, I don't want to say baffling. I mean, I get why somebody would say that, but it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. Anyways, but you look at it and it's the perfect deal for what they need. We all remember the Kurt Warner thing and what they did and didn't do right. And I think signing Warner like they did was obviously the right thing, but what they did not do, and you can him and Haw about this, and this is something you and I have talked about numerous times, you know, not on the air, but just between the two of us, and that's how the Cardinals are preparing for life after Warner. And that's been my one kind of, I don't want to say complaint, but one worry about having this faith, giving him this contract, all of these things is you have a guy that's been injured, I want to say, 5 times with 5 different injuries in his career. This is the either the 5th time or the 6th time, and obviously this is the same injury as the first main one. But so who's going to be on the wrong side of 35 in 2015, and you're extending him. And, you know, we've seen it with older quarterbacks before. All it takes is one bad hit for them to change their mind, to say, I've got $100 million in the bank. I don't need to do this anymore. You know, Kurt Warner loved the game. I don't think anybody would ever question Kurt's love of the game. But when he got knocked out against the Saints, you know, that would make anybody question what they're doing. And, you know, is it worth it, the toll it puts on your body, especially when you're that age and you've accomplished, you know, all that you've accomplished. So, you know, to get to my point finally, who's their next in line? And if Stanton was their next in line all along, then obviously that's fine. That's where the plan is. If their thought is in 2 to 3 years they can have Logan Thomas ready, well, then that's kind of walking a very slippery slope of, you know, does Palmer make it? Obviously, he didn't make it so far. We'll see what happens going forward. And, you know, and if Stanton is that short-term / long-term answer until either Thomas is ready or they bring somebody else in. But it's just one of those things that, you know, you and I have talked about. You look at kind of what the Broncos did. They brought in Manning, and then they drafted Brock Osweiler. Say what you want about Osweiler, whether or not he is the future, at least they, you know, they have a plan in place. Same thing with the Patriots. I mean, they've drafted Ryan Mallett. I think Kevin O'Connell was a 3rd-round pick as well from the Patriots. So it's not like they've ignored the position while Tom Brady's been there. And then obviously Jimmy Garoppolo in the 2nd round this year. It's just one of those things that if their thought process is, you know, Stanton's the guy to take over, and obviously we're going to find out now, unfortunately, the hard way, then I'm completely fine with it. But the way they made it sound, and I don't even say make it sound, the way they portrayed it was that it was Palmer for the next, you know, 2 years, 3 years, while they figured out the future. And when you have a quarterback that's older and, you know, injury, I don't want to say injury prone, because like I said, they were all different injuries, but injury plagued, I think is the best way to say it. I think you need to have that backup plan in place already. Like I said, if Stanton was their backup plan, then, you know, we'll see if that works out. And if not, then I think that'll change your draft philosophy in 2015 and maybe even your off-season philosophy of what you do going into next season.
Well, you mentioned the thing about Warner, about that one hit changed your mind. I don't doubt that. However, when Warner retired, there were some comments he made that made me think, huh. And it was that he talked about playing at the high level and having the necessary dedication to work hard enough and long enough, or wanting to do work hard enough and long enough to produce the results that he's expected to result. And I think part of that, it was resulting with the hits. I think that was more a concern of his family than he himself at some point. But he reached a point after that 2009 season, and if people, that the fans, the general fan, probably didn't notice that, but his arm strength, his throat, his arm talent eroded quickly from 2008 to 2009, whether it was just the fact that Todd Haley left. They pushed the ball down the field a lot. In 2009, it was everything was short intermediate passes with very, very little down the field. I mean, we've seen Peyton Manning. He throws ducks all the time up there. But Warner, in addition to those hits, was also wasn't willing to put the focus and drive in the he didn't want to do all the work and the dedication that it took to continue playing at that high level when he had other things he wanted to do. But let's actually talk about, so we talked a lot about the contract. The contract's done, but let's talk about the injury, and especially, well, we've got an 8-1 Cardinals team who now turn to their backup. They're not getting nearly as much press as another quarterback, another team in the Eagles who have turned to their backup quarterback in Mark Sanchez. If people were watching the Monday Night Football game, it was the Mark Sanchez story. And I really get it. You've got a big market team in Philadelphia. You've got a former first-round quarterback who went to a big-time program at USC. He was a rookie starter for the Jets, went to championship games, the conference championship games, then had all sorts of embarrassment. But it was so much talk about Mark Sanchez. And he is a little bit of a known commodity, but there's been talk about, you know, Stanton taking over. But it wasn't this, you know, Stanton's big chance. Just nothing. What of it? What does this Carson Palmer injury do in the short term? Obviously, we had reached a point as Cardinals fans, and I guess within the organization, within the media, I think we were on board to say, hey, this team actually does have a championship window. They might be able to do it. What does that do immediately when you take Carson Palmer out the picture and you enter in, and you add Drew Stanton?
For me, it doesn't do a whole lot. You look at how the Cardinals have been winning, even going back to last year, and I'm not sure how many times you'll look at, I'm going kind of over the numbers now, how many times you look at everything and be like, oh, yeah, they won this game because of Carson Palmer's performance. I think this year, we've seen Palmer and something I'm working on tonight for either tomorrow or Thursday. We've seen Palmer's numbers improve, and I think that's created the illusion that he's playing, or that, you know, they're putting the ball in Palmer's hand and having him make all the plays. But in reality, you know, he's not throwing the ball as much, and he's taking care of the ball more. He's not taking the same type of shots he was in the early part of 2013, which obviously ended up being an issue with turnovers and the like. So I think as long as Stanton keeps the ball in the Cardinals' hands and they do a good job of, you know, not leaning too much on the pass. They really try to work on the run game. I know the run game is terrible against the Rams, but they need to try to do more. I think they'll be fine. It's when if you try to go, you know, 49 passes from Stanton, or, you know, I'm kind of looking at the numbers and the Cardinals' losses. You had 49 against the 49ers in the last year, 41 against in the loss against the Eagles, 42 again in the win against Jacksonville, and I think that was the biggest number he had in any win that season. I think if you keep it in that 32, maybe 35 range, and you're running the ball more, you can get a similar result, or, you know, you will get similar results, in my opinion, to what Palmer was doing, as opposed to coming out here and I think the doom and gloom that everybody seems to be having. Not Cardinals fans, obviously, but pundits and things like that.
And the way we kind of see two things. Is there undoubtedly a drop-off yeah, there's definitely a drop off from Carson Palmer to Drew Stanton. The arm talent is different. The quarterbacking skills, the nuances that Palmer is able to do. Carson Palmer is a very good quarterback, and the numbers show it ever since he sort of clicked in the system. Seven games into the season last year, ever since, he's putting up as good a set of quarterback numbers as you see throughout the entire league. Stanton's not the same player. However, the Cardinals have set themselves up as a team. You notice that you pointed it out. They've set themselves up as the team that they've built the team so it doesn't have to be the quarterback that wins the games for them to be competitive. They've got a defense that doesn't give up points. I mean, they just don't give up points. They give up yards, but then they take the ball away. They don't give up yards in the run. And so they create they force offenses to be one-dimensional. And then you have a big play capability on offense. But you don't have to have Carson Palmer throwing for 350 and 400 yards a game to accomplish that. When Stanton was starting earlier, I compared him a lot to the 2012 Kevin Cobb. If Stanton is healthy and can complete, 55% of his passes, throw more touchdowns than interceptions, they're going to be in the mix. Now, what happens in the playoffs when they're... Now, if everything plays out and they can still lock up that number one seed, they'll never have to leave University of Phoenix Stadium. That's when you start perhaps facing the Morley quarterbacks. And now, granted, I'm going to say, they faced Eli Manning, he didn't kill him. Faced Philip Rivers, he's had a fantastic year. Couldn't beat him. It was only Peyton Manning that really was able to exploit over the entire game, is really able to exploit some of the defensive things, that because even Nick Foles threw for a lot of yards, didn't beat him. Kirk Cousins threw for a lot of, didn't beat him. And so, yeah, can the Cardinals do it with Stanton? I look at Kevin Cobb at healthy, they were winning games. If he can stay healthy, I really like their chances. I look back Arizona Sports had a great article that kind of featured all the nine backup quarterbacks that took their teams and won Super Bowls. I don't go back to nearly all of them. I do remember Jeff Hostetler with the Giants. And that's kind of the one that I look at. I kind of look at the Jeff Hostetler situation. It was later in the season. And they had a little bit different team, but it wasn't a team that was built on Phil Simms chucking the rock it was a different era, one. But they had Otis Anderson. They had some playmakers at receiver. They had a solid defense, and Lawrence Taylor there as well. The Cardinals have Calais Campbell. They got Patrick Peterson and Tony Cromartie. They've got playmakers on defense. They don't need Drew Stanton to be Tom Brady or Peyton Manning. They don't even need him to be Carson Palmer to win games. They do need him to step up and make plays when it counts. But if with all the Cardinals have gone through this year, why not? Can Drew Stanton do it? Why not? Everyone else has stepped up at every other position, and at this point, it's hard to not believe in the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and that's something that you and I have talked about. And, I might be more, I guess, pro Stanton, or I don't want to say anti Warner, but like, I think more along the lines that I have faith in Stanton and his ability to do what Bruce Arians wants, and that creates that creates a comfort level for Arians. And I don't think what you're going to see with Stanton is Arians chucking the ball around the field and asking him to do a ton of different stuff. What you're going to see is an absurd amount of balls thrown into that deeper range, into the 10-plus yard range, you're going to see a lot of balls thrown down the middle because Stanton's a much better passer down the middle of the field as opposed to the outside, outside the hashes. You know, even that John Brown touchdown that he threw on Sunday, that's technically a middle-of-the-field type throw, even though he was, I think, ended up a little outside the hashes. You know, it wasn't like he was asked to throw it to the sidelines. That's still something he's throwing down the middle of the field. And that's where he has his most success. And I think that's where the one, I don't want to say minute because it's a major difference, but I think that's where the one difference and one thing that they're going to have to do and figure out is how can they get Stanton to get the ball outside the hashes with some accuracy and the, you know, because that's where Palmer's really been winning this year is outside the hashes, especially in that like 5 to 12 yard range, getting the ball out quick and letting his receivers make plays.
Now the next thing is, this is kind of a secondary question here, is there a concern for Stanton's health? He's already been hurt one day. He was already got hurt. In fact, you look back at his starts, he's got the 3 starts under his belt against San Francisco. He took a licking. I mean, he got hit, and it looked like he was hurt really bad and didn't end up being anything. But then against Denver, he ended up then it, and in the Denver game, he did get concussed, and he missed some time, and that's how that ended up happening. Palmer ended up coming back, but Bruce Arians talked about the need for Stanton to be more careful, to slide, to protect himself more, because he's a little bit more reckless. He likes to get out and run. He likes to move around. In that sense, he's kind of like a Jeff Hostetler, kind of like a Kevin Cobb, who is willing to move around and make plays and extend plays like that. Are you concerned, perhaps, that he'll be able to stay healthy long enough? I mean, in the 3 games, he already managed to get hurt once. But there's 7 games left of the season. Are we going to be able to count on Stanton for all 7 of those games?
I guess me getting negative right here will be the one thing. And I'm a huge Logan Thomas fan. Everybody knows that. But if Logan Thomas is your quarterback for anything outside of a, I don't want to say, quarter, but, you know, anything outside of a half, maybe.
Yeah, mop-up like, duty, quarter, yeah, half, or playing in a game where the Cardinals already locked up their seed, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Then there is problems. So I think that's, you know, you don't want to see that. And that's not a shot at Thomas. That's just the reality of where they are. Stanton, I don't think, is a better player physically than Thomas, but mentally he understands Arians' offense, he understands the game, he understands what's being asked of him, he understands that he doesn't have to win these games, that he can not make mistakes, carry, you know, make enough throws. I mean, you look at what he did on Sunday, and he came in cold and made a game-winning touchdown pass. It's not like he just came in and handed the ball off 6 times and then went back to the bench after they scored a touchdown. He came in and threw a game-winning touchdown pass. So it's one of those things where he has the ability to make the big plays. It's just that they can't ask him to do it as much as you would Palmer. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of what you have said before about, you know, he can't carry a team like Palmer. I don't think you ask him to do as much as Palmer, and that's what the problem might be.
What if, you know, the Cardinals brought on Ryan Lindley? Obviously, he's going to be the number 3. It was shown in the preseason that they wanted Logan Thomas. Lindley was going to have to be head and shoulders above Thomas, and he wasn't. He didn't get a lot of playing time, but they knew who they had in Ryan Lindley. There was the comment going around Twitter. A couple of people that I follow, that I know on Twitter, were talking about how they would be more comfortable with Lindley They'd be more comfortable with Lindley being the backup in the case of Stanton, something happened to Stanton, than Logan Thomas. And I agree with that sentiment a little bit because, you know, Lindley has a little bit of game experience under his belt. He's seen more. He's, by all accounts, bright, very bright when it comes to knowledge of the offense and protections. The execution, though, I mean, come on. Let's put it in perspective. Logan Thomas, within his first 8 throws in the NFL, threw a touchdown pass. Ryan Lindley still has not in an NFL regular season game. And he had lots of playing time back in 2012. But would you be any more... I mean, I would be slightly more comfortable with Ryan Lindley only because he's been around the game longer. I don't think that means he'd be any more successful than Logan Thomas. But I would say that for at least for his football knowledge, I would have a little more comfort in that. That doesn't mean I'm comfortable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm in complete disagreement with that, and I saw that earlier as well. You know, you don't want to ever say the season's lost. But if Stanton goes down and is out for the year, I just, you know, chalk it up to this isn't supposed to be the year. And that's, you know, and to me then, that's the perfect opportunity and time to just see what you have in Logan Thomas. Kind of what we talked about earlier, you know, just figure out if he's going to be a guy that you can count on. If not, then, you know, you have to reevaluate your situation. Because then into 2015, and I don't think we're getting ahead if we just mention this, but if you go into 2015 and, you know, you lost Palmer for the year and Stanton goes down for the year, you probably need to figure out what your situation is going into 2015, because you're talking about a guy that's coming off tearing the same ACL twice in Stanton, who's literally never been able to stay healthy in his entire career. So maybe you need to reevaluate the situation from 1 to 3, as opposed to maybe just reevaluate the situation at 2 and 3, or just 3, or something of that nature.
So what if we look forward, looking forward, in fact, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is Jess Ruth and Seth Cox talking Arizona Cardinals football. You're familiar with the show, I'm sure, already. We've talked about Carson Palmer's injury, Drew Stanton moving forward, what the Cardinals need to do differently, perhaps. You said, you know, he's got to do some things more in the middle of the field, but he should. Would we want to see improvement outside? But let's actually talk about the game that we saw on Sunday between the Rams and the Cardinals. And one thing we saw that was different was this. The Cardinals had a pass rush. And part of that, Austin Davis is not probably anybody's franchise quarterback, and he does struggle with the blitz, but after only 8 sacks in the first 8 games of the season, the Cardinals exploded for 6 sacks on Sunday. Calais Campbell had a pair. We saw Marcus Bernard get one, Alex Okafor get one, Deion Buchanan got one, and then rookie Kareem Martin got himself a sack fumble that Antonio Cromartie picked up and ran in for the score. So let's talk pass rush. Let's talk about the play of Patrick Peterson. What was the best part? What did you like from what you saw out of the Cardinals defense on Sunday?
I think you liked what they were able to do up front. The Rams offensive line is severely beat up, but they've invested a lot of money on that offensive. So even without Jake Long and I forget who else they were missing. I think it was Joe Barksdale, their right tackle, and I get that. But the Cardinals, in turn, are missing their starting left defensive end and their starting outside linebacker. So, I mean, you know, I think it's a fair trade-off in terms of that. So, no, Barksdale didn't play, I'm sorry. So then, oh, it was their right guard. That's who they're missing, their right guard. So, you know, what ends up happening is you have Calais Campbell kind of bullying, picking on the rookie. You have a lot of guys getting into situations that are conducive to success, and that's something that we haven't seen outside of Calais Campbell in terms of pass rush do all season. We haven't seen them do on a consistent basis. Acho produced a little bit of pass rush. He didn't have any sacks, but he was getting around the edge a little bit. Alex Okafor got another sack. Like you said, Campbell and Martin both produced a little bit of a push. I thought Tommy Kelly did a good job rushing the passer in his limited snaps. I think the rotation up front really, because you have a lot of big, long, strong, and fast bodies coming at you, and what it ended up doing was allowing Okafor and Acho to be on the edge with. Well, Robinson's a rookie, and I said coming out, I didn't like him as a left tackle right now, anyways. So I think that was a matchup that you're happy to see. I think you're happy to see that Okafor won that matchup, even though I was of the opinion he should have won that matchup just for the time being, and he did. And obviously Campbell, like I said, we know what he's going to do every week when he's healthy, and he's dominating. So I think that was the best thing. Obviously the secondary was excellent. A little bit of a hiccup at times early, trying to control and contain Tavon Austin. I thought the Rams did a good job early of getting him into space and letting him make guys miss. I think it was Gerard Powers missed a couple tackles on him. So it created situations where you could win consistently, and the Cardinals, like they always do, adapted and made the plays later on, and that's kind of what we've come to expect from Todd Bowles and his defense, and that's what we've seen, and I think that's just kind of how we're expecting the season to continue to go, is that the Cardinals are going to be dominant in the second half of games defensively.
And I loved what I loved the fact that we were getting a pass rush from so many areas, and that they, it wasn't just the sacks, but they were getting pressure. And other times you saw everyone get involved. I mean, Marcus Bernard, he had three whole snaps the whole game, and in one of those snaps he managed to get a sack. Kareem Martin, we finally saw him make a play. But let's talk a little bit about Patrick Peterson. Can we say that he's back? Can we? And he talked about it again after the game. He hasn't been 100%. That ankle injury lingered, and he wasn't able to do some of the things. Now, we have seen him lose focus. The touchdown that went to DeSean Jackson was a technique thing. However, that doesn't mean that he's played so well, basically since saying, okay, it's time for me to come back. You're going to see this type of play for the rest of the season. And that interception that Peters hadn't had, where he tipped the ball to himself, was something that was out of this world amazing to see, that only a Patrick Peterson could have done. I think we're seeing, and we're going to, because Antonio Cromartie, we're going to see that pass defense shore up a bit, because Peterson's healthy, he's focused, and he's looking like the shutdown corner that he's always said he is, that we've seen him be able to. Do you think we can count on that?
I do, and I think if it was a injury that has plagued him, then I think we might be over the hump, and if we're over the hump, then, I think you can expect it. If it's mental lapses, then I don't think we're ever at least this year going to be able to say, oh yeah, he's going to lock down the field. That's the hard part is, you know, you and I have talked about it numerous times. Is it mental lapses or is it just a physical thing? And right now, I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt that it was more physical leading to the mental as opposed to mental leading to the physical. And so I think with that theory in mind, yes, he's going to kind of lock it down.
And we're gonna, well, the perfect example is what we're going to see this week. He's going to be facing Calvin Johnson. He's got some games coming up with some big-time receivers. I mean, he's got Calvin Johnson coming up later this season. They've got Julio Jones, Roddy White. They've got Atlanta. They've got Kansas City. Now, Kansas City just, you know, they don't use their receivers too much, it doesn't seem. He's got Crabtree coming later this year. So there's some matchups there, and we're going to get to see that. But this just continues to lead me to believe that, you know, even with Palmer out, there's still some of the best of the Cardinals that we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen the best of the Cardinals defensively. They've been pretty damn good. They've shut down the run. They got to the passer. That before they were moving they were making him leave his spot. They're getting him off the spot. But this, they actually got sacks. Now, granted, that was Austin Davis. So I'll temper that excitement a little bit. But now you're going to add to that Tyrann Mathieu is basically back to himself. Patrick Peterson is healthy and dynamic. Antonio Cromartie has been nothing short of amazing this year, outside of the Denver game. He's been nothing short of great. And then on top of that, I mean, you've got the rookie Buchanan who's playing better and better every week. It's just a really exciting time to be an Arizona Cardinals fan, it seems, defensively as well as offensively.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, you temper your excitement of the pass rush with the caveat of Austin Davis and that Rams young, kind of trying to figure things out offensive line. But you can only play who's in front of you, and if you're playing a bad unit,
you should make them look bad.
Exactly. and they did that. So I think that's more important than you know, looking at it and going, oh well, you know, we'll see what happens next game. If as long as they're beating the groups they're supposed to beat when they have that opportunity, that's what matters. We know that they're going to do a great job against the run. So, we don't expect anybody to run on them, especially when you shut down Dallas's run game. There really should be no, the expectation should be there that nobody can run on you. Now, you're shifting that over and you want to see consistency. Obviously, you're not thinking six sacks a game, but even half that, three sacks a game, I think that's fair to expect. I think you can say expect. I think that's fair to expect from this team with the talent they have on the back end.
Well, and let's look at the Lions game coming up. Obviously, we thought that Dallas game was important. And yes, it was because it was on the road, but then they ended up facing Brandon Whedon. They were without their entire state. They didn't have their starting offensive line. But let's look at the Lions. Now, the Lions, interestingly enough, might be down a couple of offensive linemen. And
yep, they will be without Watford. I asked a couple of Lions guys today, so he'll be out.
So Warford is definitely going to not play?
Warford, thank you. Yes.
Ah, that's a big loss. a big loss for them.
Yeah.
But they're going to face a team that's very, very physical. What we've seen is that the Cardinals have dominated the defense. I mean, they've been able to dominate the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball pretty much all year. They have not dominated on the offensive side of the ball, and they're going to be facing a defensive front that has been every bit, if not more, dominating than the Cardinals' front seven. This is a huge game, and thank goodness that it's at home, because they play so much better at home than they do on the road. And that's going to be... This has got to be the game of the year for the Cardinals, I think. I mean, we had a game of the year already. It was the San Francisco game, because were they able to beat a team that they needed to beat in the division that was down players, and they did it. So that was a game of the year for them. Then they move up, they go on, and they win again in Dallas, another game of the year. And this game, these games keep getting bigger and bigger. I don't know if they'll be any bigger than this weekend. Perhaps that Sunday night game against Seattle at home in Week 16. But I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be any bigger than this game. And the matchup, that's a really tough matchup.
Yeah, and people are lamenting what happened to Warner and the continued stubbornness of Arians to not play Cooper. Well, you're going to face the best interior defensive lineman in the NFL this week, so you better buckle up the chin strap, because Ted Larson and Paul Fonica, and even Lyle Sendline, who hasn't been great this year, they're going to have their work cut out for them. I mean, it's coming, and I'm tweeting out some of the numbers now and just looking at it. They drop back with Palmer, you know, about 40 times a game. With Stanton, they drop back about 32 times a game. That's 8 more plays that you're going to be expecting your offensive line to do a good job of creating space for your running back, who hasn't been good this year. He's been very average. I mean, he's had excellent games, but overall he's been mostly average. And I think a lot of that is because of the offensive line. So now you're going to ask them to go up against probably the best defensive line in football, at least playing the best. So,
you know. The Cardinals who don't run the ball well are going against a team that doesn't allow teams to run the ball. That's going to be interesting, and then to see the backup quarterback. So,
yeah, and I think that's kind of what my thought is the Cardinals don't run the ball a ton anyways, but they run the ball more with Stanton in there than Palmer. So, all of a sudden now you're expecting. You know, you're expecting those about 8 play flip to runs, and yeah, I mean it's gonna be interesting, because as good as 8-1 is, and as much as I think that you can't complain about it, you do definitely have to look at this game as the matchup of the year right now, because obviously that could change again, like you said, with Seattle coming to town. Or going to Seattle, or maybe San Francisco to end the year. But you look at this right now, this is for first place in the NFC. This could potentially be a tiebreaker for seeding. So I think you'd really, really like to have Stanton have to take one less game of hits if you can figure out how to get a bye in the playoffs. And so that kind of that'll stack up right here with everything that's going on and what they need to do. So, like I said, you know, it'll probably not at the end of the year be the game that was the most important, but just based on what's going on, where they're at, and everything that's going on right now, I think you can make the case that it is absolutely the most important.
Looking ahead, I mean, are there any other topics, that things that you want to bring up in the show tonight, Seth?
I think this is just going to be a really important opportunity for Stanton. Something that you and I texted about a little bit the other night was, if Stanton plays really, really well, what are your thoughts for 2015? What do you do? Because as great as the story of Palmer was this year, I don't think it's fair to expect him to come back in 2015 and just pick up where he left off, because he was having a, you know, sort of career renaissance this year with his play. And he's coming, you know, he's going to be 35 coming off of another knee surgery on the same knee. It's his, you know, it's his plant leg, it's his front leg. You have to wonder what's going to, you know, mentally, not even physically, just mentally, that's going to do to him. And if Stanton plays well, is it time to say, okay, well, maybe we need to re-up Stanton and kind of have a open competition type of thing coming into 2015? And I still think Palmer's your QB1 in theory coming into next year, but if Stanton does everything that we think he could do, and he leads this team to, you know, a top two seed and maybe an NFC championship game appearance, I think that warrants the same type of respect that you're giving to Palmer in terms of contract security. Now, on the flip side, if Stanton says, I want to start, look at what I just did, and you want to see if you can maybe go get a second-round pick for him, then by all means, same type, you know, I think that's a fair game as well. But I think Stanton playing well creates a good problem to have. Stanton not playing well creates a problem that nobody even wants to discuss.
Well, that's actually something I forgot to bring up earlier in the show, is the scenarios. What if Stanton does the Hostetler thing, or at minimum, Stanton does well enough, plays well enough that they not only get into the postseason, which they should. At 8-1, it's never been done where they didn't make the postseason. But he gets into the playoffs, or they have a bye. They make it to the NFC Championship game. Maybe they make the Super Bowl. Maybe they're not. Maybe they win the Super Bowl. But he plays well enough to think, hey, we could do this with Stanton. Then it puts him in an interesting situation, because he's under contract only one more year. Does he sit back at that number two spot again and let Palmer come back, assuming that he's going to be healthy, much like Jeff Hostetler did? Or is it going to be a case where he's going to want to play, or the Cardinals say, oh, now it's time to sell high. They trade him. They cut him. They draft the guy that they want. Say someone that they really love falls to the end of the first round. I think at that point, I mean, there's lots of scenarios to play around with, all of which are actually not, I mean, if Stanton plays well, there's no bad scenario. If say the Cardinals somehow do win the Super Bowl, Carson Palmer comes back, I still think this is his team. I think Stanton knows that well enough, because the team is still very much behind Palmer as the leader of the team. Stanton could develop some of that, but to compare that to the Arizona State situation, you're one to say that Mike Bercovici is probably better for the team when it comes to quarterback talent. Taylor Kelly is still the captain, the guy that the team rallies around. Bercovici is not far behind, but that's why you need to put Kelly back in, because the team still views him as the number one in that sort of situation. So Palmer comes back now, unless he suddenly is terrible, or he reverts to, you know, first half of last season, then you can turn to Stanton. But I think it would allow Stanton to be in a position to be, well, hey, he's still in a great position here in Arizona. You have an old quarterback who might get hurt. You've already won a ring, so you know that your value is not going to be any higher. And you're under contract for more year, and then you're going to be able to get yourself a starting job, whether it's still in Arizona or it's elsewhere. If Stanton is bad, well, we'll talk about that later. I don't want to think that, because I don't want to spoil the sort of season this has been, because this has been some sort of a season for Phoenix football fans, between the Arizona State story, the Cardinals, the 2-8-1 teams. It's like the universe is upside down right now, and I don't want it to change. I don't want that to change at all.
Well, and And to quell any, like, fan concern, and maybe this won't, I don't know. I look at this team and I just look at it and say, this team is not reliant on the quarterback to win games. I'm just, like I said, I was going through Palmer's numbers, and I mean, I would look at Palmer's best games kind of coincided with when the Cardinals' defense was dominating games. So do I look at it and say, well, then, you know, Palmer's gone. They're going to put all this on Stanton. He's never done it before. Probably not. And I think that's okay. I mean, you look at the Dallas game. I think that game was probably his best game of the season, and the defense turned that around, giving him a short field, letting him, you know, getting him back into position to get back on the field, creating turnovers. You look at the Philly game, same type of thing. Their offense was stagnant for a long period of time, but when Philly had a short field, they still couldn't convert. You know, intercepting Foles, causing turnovers. All you need to do from Drew Stanton's point of view is not screw things up. And I think that is being overlooked in the whole scheme of things, that Arians hasn't asked him to do anything that he's not comfortable or able to. So now, why would he start doing that now? And you know what? Maybe he does, and I'm wrong for thinking that he's going to continue to use Stanton the way he had before. But I think it's a comfort to know that he's had success already. They've won big games already with Stanton, and they don't have to be this team that throws the ball 40 times a game to win. And maybe that'll put more focus on the running game.
Well, Arizona Cardinals fans, we've reached the end of another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. We will have, I have already lined up a show with Sean Yule from Pride of Detroit, Arizona, the SB Nation Detroit Lions blog. Sean Yule will be joining me on the show later this week. I will have that posted up later. Seth, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we close the show?
Well, I think it's just going to be an exciting week. This is one of those games that even if Palmer was playing, we talked about it a little bit. It's a strength versus weakness for both sides type game where, you know, the Cardinals run defense is great. The Lions running game is bad. Lions run defense is great. The Cardinals run game is bad. So it's going to be a lot of questions about can the quarterbacks make enough plays and not turn the ball over and give the other team short field. And I think that question would be the same whether it was Stanton or Palmer. So it's a very difficult game. The Lions are the number two team in the NFC for a reason, and I think it's going to be a fun game to watch.
All right. That was Seth Cox. This is Jess Rude. Hey, Arizona Cardinals fans, with the two of us, we'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a 9-1 Arizona Cardinals team who have defeated the Detroit Lions and still sit atop of the NFC. If not, we'll have some other topics to talk about, but let's hope that doesn't happen. Have a good night, Seth. Thanks for coming on, as always.
All right, Jess. Have a good one, man.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.